Hello and welcome back to the Daily Friend Rap Show. My name is Anlu Kieva and I will be standing in for Nicholas Lorimer today. He is unfortunately still off sick. As Makone said yesterday, please have some patience. We are not used to managing the background as well. So if something does creep in, I do apologize in advance. I'm joined today by Chris Hutting. Thank you very much for joining us, Chris. And we will be discussing Ramaphosa's leave, whether he will be leaving or not. We'll have a look at the upcoming G20 and some shifts that we've seen there. And then finally, we will conclude with a look at recent rating agency shifts. So let's start off with our first story. Chris Cyril Ramaphosa has reportedly told the ANC, NEC or National Executive Committee that he will step down if they give him a date by which he should resign. It remains unclear whether he referred to which one of his two positions, whether it's the head of state or the ANC's president. Which one of these two it is that he should supposedly vacate. And this then follows media reports suggesting that Ramaphosa is ready to resign and he could do it as early as the week after the G20 summit, which is in 4 days from now. So we know that his term as ANC president ends in December of 2027. And his second and last term as head of state ends in 2029. So the article today in Business Day reporting on this says that there are many reasons his enemies would want him to leave before his end of term, and then goes on to list his calls for, some of these things that his enemies would like him to leave for. Some of the reasons is him calling leaders of the ANC to subject themselves to lifestyle audits. Then there's also obviously the national elections and the ANC's voter support there. And then, of course, some of his enemies are not very happy with the actual forming of the GNU coalition. So the article goes on to explain that we've seen some positive progress, including the S&P rating upgrade, which we'll get to a little bit later, and that the progress that we have seen can't be divorced from his leadership. And that some of this could be owed to his leadership. They continue to say that the president's early and likely messy exit from office would undermine his stability and fuel uncertainty that the country can ill afford. An emergency exit, as happened with his two predecessors, would benefit a few within the ANC, not the rest of the country. The country's fragile economy cannot afford leadership uncertainty, which, while quickly developed into costly policy uncertainty. The ANC has a poor record of managing succession. Its leadership squabbles after Nelson Mandela's well-choreographed departure had notoriously paralyzed governance. Memorably, a 2007 joint letter by Thabo Mbeki and Jacob Zuma failed to insulate governance from the ANC's factional battles. So I wonder, Chris, do you think Cyril was right to dare those who challenge his leadership in the way that he did? And what do you think are the odds of Cyril actually leaving before the end of term as at least the head of state?
Yeah, it depends how exactly the ANC wants to play sort of election campaign into 2020, into the next local government elections at the end of 2026 into 2027, and possibly into the next election cycle in 2029. So it depends whether they think, you know, you get out ahead of this and you early on say you open it up and try and figure out who the next leader might be. In all probability, the deputy president, Paul Mashatile, who retains the most support in the NEC and also I think amongst most of the branches, there will be a contest, but I think Mashatile is the clear leader. So it depends on that strategy point of view, what you want to put forward. And also if you want to, as the ANC, shed a bit of an image that has been built around President Ramaphosa on the back of his own actions around compromise and wanting to seek consensus and doing the long-term sort of thing. So even by him putting out this statement, he's again putting the onus on others to take action. He himself isn't necessarily, but he's saying, I will do this if you all ask me to do so, if you instruct me to do so. So in a way, it's maybe him trying to preempt early moves against him, which to me indicates he wants to serve out his full term. I don't think he'll leave soon after the G20 summit. The summit itself and the whole presidency for South Africa, the G20 presidency, I think to Ramaphosa, he sees it as a big feather in his cap for his legacy, first African president to host a G20 summit. Regardless of what one can rightly point out around the summit and the U.S. choosing not to participate, all of those geopolitical implications, he will see it as a feather in his cap for his legacy, along with something like the GNU and the compromise that they managed to reach that is his sort of style. Something also to keep in mind as we head towards the next ANC elective conference, likely in 2027, the contestation will become even more fierce if it hasn't been already. So between different factions, between the different individuals, because you're competing for patronage, you're competing for influence, you're competing for access to state resources for yourself and for those aligned in your faction. So whether you're now aligned with Mashatile or Fikile Mbalula or a host of other individuals who will contest, that's the competition. And then tied to that is possibly the route that the ANC will take following that elective conference in terms of coalition partners. So will they still choose to be part of the GNU or will they seek some kind of proper coalition with parties like the MK and the EFF? That will probably be determined by the particular leader and what they prefer. So there's lots on the table here. The reporting by Business Day, just something to highlight here, is that markets and sort of financial commentators, they do prefer stability and predictability, and that's not always the best thing. So if you get stability and predictability of bad policy, of policy that inhibits economic growth, that discourages investment, you know, things like the Expropriation Act, NHI, more aggressive BEE, it's one thing to say there's certainty and this will be implemented, but the certainty on bad policy doesn't lead to higher investment or job creation. You need certainty of good policy. So, you know, I'm not hoping for a very messy sort of leadership contest, as it were, because, you know, it is more difficult to figure out and deal with for businesses, especially in the country. But within that, you could have the continued decline of the ANC. So the more there is uncertainty in terms of which faction has the upper hand, the more maybe there's an indication that the contestation is very fierce. And over time, that weakens the ANC. So it distracts it from implementing its worst policies. That could be a good thing probably for South Africa in the long run. It opens up opportunities for other political parties in terms of how they do their messaging, how they contest, how they put themselves forward, those in the GNU, those outside the GNU. I think political uncertainty and a little bit of instability isn't inherently a bad thing. It depends on how it's managed, how strong the country's institutions are, how the political parties deal with it, all that kind of thing. But it is noteworthy that I think President Ramaphosa tried in some ways to get out ahead of this. Just a last note, given the contestation and the factionalism within the ANC, and as electorally the party declines, the contestation becomes more fierce because you've got pressure on these patronage networks and influence and all that sort of thing. This could also be a way for President Ramaphosa and those who are more aligned with him and want to succeed him to see what can they flush out or what can they gain in terms of reactions to his statement. So those within the NEC and within the ANC, which ones say, no, please, you know, stay on, we support your program. And those who say, yeah, it's about time for you to leave. It gives possibly some more data or indications to those who might succeed Ramaphosa in terms of, you know, where one should play one's cards in the NEC of the ANC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think going into next year's local government elections also, there will be a lot to read into, and that will certainly affect also the elections within the ANC and the next national elections. You mentioned how important the G20's presidency is to Cyril and to his legacy. And that brings us to our next story, which is on the G20. We know that it's just 4 days out. It's going to be held in Johannesburg, of course, and we've just recently had our Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Ronald Lamola, doing a media statement, a media briefing, and we can see him very clearly coming out and saying that essentially South Africa is unfazed by countries not attending, and this would include then particularly the heads of states of Russia, Argentina, Mexico, and China, and then, of course, the U.S.'s full absence. So yesterday we saw on that, I don't know who saw it, but there's this amusingly small table where we can see Gauteng Premier Panyaza Lesufi, and then of course Finance Minister Ido Konokwana, and then our International Relations Ronald Lamola. They're briefing the media and essentially just reaffirming that South Africa is very committed to fostering consensus around the G20, and saying that they are forging ahead with the negotiations surrounding the South African declaration, and that they strongly believe that the countries present is enough for them to adopt the declaration. So Ronald Lamola went on, and he, when he addressed the concerns surrounding the absence of the US, he said, even with the US, when they raised concerns, we did our best to accommodate them, and they did come back into some of the meetings. At some point, it was indicated that they would be full participants, including that the leaders' summit, that they would be fully represented by at the vice presidency level, but they have now decided, out of their own volition, and not being pushed out of the G20 by South Africa. So very clearly indicating here that we are not saying that they should not come. The article then goes on to explain that Lamola said Pretoria doesn't take the absence of the US as a snub or an attempt to undermine the African agenda. Now, this is a little bit awkward. I don't know if it's for you too, but for me it is, because this comes on the back of, we saw, speaking in the Oval Office of the White House alongside President Donald Trump, after many comments that Trump has made himself, Secretary of the Treasury Scott Bessent saying that under the G20, the US G20 presidency, which obviously commences on the 1st of December, that there would be fewer participants. And then in a video on Monday, he said that the US is back on the international stage as a leader, and that they have whittled down the G20 back to basics. We're making it work for the American people better than ever. So I wonder, Chris, it's awkward for me in the sense that it feels almost like the South African government is ignoring the very on-the-nose message that the Trump administration is trying to send. When they say that, amongst other things, very bad things are happening in South Africa. Do you think South Africa is just showing like diplomatic leadership? Do you think they're trying to show diplomatic leadership? Are they just doing some symbolic posturing? And then, of course, I wonder whether the absence of the US is weakening any credibility of the declaration that we do intend to adopt and send out. Especially considering that the US is the incoming host, obviously president.
Yeah, I suppose from a macro point of view, these multilateral institutions, as the G20 tries to be the United Nations, the World Trade Organization, the World Health Organization, the African Union in some ways, they're facing a serious challenge where, to give President Trump some props here, in his address to the United Nations earlier this year, he talked about how in many ways the UN is ineffective in dealing with global challenges and has encountered many difficulties. And I think there's a lot of merit to that. On the African continent, in the African context, you see a genocide in Sudan. You see a few weeks ago illegally contested elections in Tanzania. You saw serious human rights abuses and oppression in Tanzania on the back of those election results. And the African Union, and SADC put out statements. There might be, one or two presidents say something, but there's no action in terms of that. There's no sort of taking steps to deal with it. And there might be this contrast between how the US is now engaging in geopolitics in a more sort of direct way and not just talking about it, versus how multilateral bodies like the G20 continue to talk about challenges, things like, debt sustainability, debt issues for emerging markets, inclusivity, equity, all these kinds of things. But then they don't come forward in a sort of action way to deal with these challenges. So there is a bit of a credibility challenge there for these sorts of institutions, for South Africa's, many issues. I guess it now comes to a head as it is the president of the G20. So it's a very serious time for the G20 going forward. Those comments by Treasury Secretary Bessent, they were just to add a note, those were from earlier this year. So I've seen the comment as being recycled now, but it's consistent with what the administration has been putting out in terms of their view of the G20. I got to go to Washington twice this year, and lots of my engagements with people who work in Congress and in the Senate, the feedback was, we want to focus on the finance track and on the summit. And the summit will be held at Mar-a-Lago, so in Florida. And that's where the focus is for the US. Whether one agrees with that or not, they're going to focus on the finance track, possibly things more around finance, trade, and investment. So to sort of, you know, wrap up on this, South Africa could, in terms of handing over and credibility, they could try and work into any kind of statement or declaration a focus on things like, how do we get more investment going? How do we get more trade going? How do we implement the Africa Continental Free Trade Area? How do we get US companies to invest in South Africa from a growth job creation point of view? What policy reforms are we as South Africa pursuing to make it easier for the US and other countries to invest? That could then be more appealing to the Trump administration. And just a very last point on this, for whatever people one could say about President Trump, I still, you know, he wants to leave. We talked about President Ramaphosa and some of the legacies he wants to leave. President Trump wants to be, you know, styled as a deal maker, a peacemaker. If South Africa can still find ways to package deals, investment agreements, that kind of thing, I still think that could get some purchase with the US. But South Africa makes its job, you know, difficult with some of the statements that they put out. I mean, Minister Lamola and others in Durko in the last 2 weeks talking about the Trump administration and President Trump in very unsavory terminology versus what people in the Treasury might be doing, who are trying to sell South Africa as an investment destination, as a trading partner. And you've got these different parts of the government almost contradicting and then undermining work that the others are doing that hurts South Africa's sort of credibility on the global stage, from an investment point of view, from a diplomacy point of view, et cetera, et cetera. So never mind President Ramaphosa wanting to leave this grand legacy. If he could just leave a legacy of getting his ministers and departments to sing from the same hymn sheet, that would be quite an achievement.
That would be a job well done indeed. There's various aspects where we can see just miscommunication and talking over one another throughout government. So it would indeed be a job well done. So let's get to our last story. We are looking at a comment that followed after the medium-term budget policy statement that came out on the 13th of November. And Moody's, who is a rating agency, they noted that for the first time since the COVID-19 pandemic, South Africa did not actually revise its deficit forecast higher than the initial budget did. And this is thanks to mainly a stronger than expected tax collection, especially from VAT and corporate income tax. However, Moody's noted that 80% of the revenue overperformance is allocated to additional net spending. And this leaves the overall fiscal deficit unchanged at 4.5% of GDP, despite a better primary balance. So Moody currently sees South Africa as essentially two notches below investment grade, but with a stable outlook. And this is, of course, very important for if we want investment in the country, if we want people to come and actually invest in gross fixed capital formation, which is our fixed assets. It's very important. People often look at rating agencies and what they say about the reputation of a country. So South Africa has just been upgraded by the S&P Global last week, end of last week, which aligns with Moody's. But Moody's next review is only due on the 5th of December. So the article out today continues that Moody's said the government's strategy for lowering debt rested on several assumptions. The outlook will also depend on a pickup in economic growth to 2% by 2028, which South Africa has not reached in the past decade as structural reforms to ease infrastructure and energy constraints advance. Now, we know that the MTBPS, or medium-term budget policy statement, revised our growth slightly downwards. On another point, there's been development in the formal adoption of a 3% inflation target, And while this change raised the debt to GDP ratio for this year to 77.9%, Moody's sees potential long-term benefits in that. So definitely a positive view from their side to our adoption, formal adoption rather, of this 3% inflation target. And then Moody's makes a very important note that while this has a once-off negative effect, adopting this 3% inflation target is very important because of the medium-term prospects and the benefits that it has to lowering borrowing costs for the government and other South African debt issuers. And this will then have a positive outlook on our, or positive effect on South Africa's fiscal outlook. So, despite the MTBBS showing some progress, Moody seems to remain very cautious. They're saying that South Africa has potential here, but there's still lots that are unstable and moving around. Chris, what's your take on this? Do you agree with Moody's cautious view, or do you have a more positive outlook?
Broadly on the same page. I think this is consistent with what we unpacked and detailed last week in our CRA MTBBS sort of debrief. Also, what we put out this week in our Monday morning risk alert for clients, that sort of high level, you know, headlines look positive around the mini budget. I don't want to discount good work that has been done by Treasury in the last 3 to 5 years, also by the Reserve Bank. If you look at things like the grey listing, getting us off the grey list so quickly, that takes, you know, serious work. And there's a question whether this would have been possible absent the GNU and having different ministers in, especially the Department of Finance. So that's very important to note. However, because our growth fundamentals remain so weak, because the structural reforms on things like electricity, logistics, crime, you know, they're the high level, the headlines are there, the rhetoric is there, but not the policy or legislation reforms just yet. So it's one thing to say it's been positive from a sort of high level numbers point of view, that you've got things like a primary budget surplus, that you possibly have your debt to GDP ratio peaking, not declining yet, but at least so that the arrow is sort of pointing that way. It's not yet pointing downward. So yes, it's different from what we've been used to for the last 10 to 15 years, but you need to see it sustained quarter on quarter, year on year. So if we get to 1.5 to 1.8% quarter on quarter growth for 4 to 5, 6 quarters, if you see that debt peaking and declining, then I'll be more optimistic. But for now, I think one shouldn't, you know, from a business point of view, you shouldn't think that the operating environment is just yet going to improve on the sort of supply side, macro side of things. Just you know, there's a lot of work still to be done for the turnaround to be entrenched, as it were, from given where we're coming from.
Yeah, nice. I agree with that. Okay, we'll call the show to a close here. Thank you very much for watching with us. And we will be back tomorrow. If Nicholas is better, he will be the host once again. We'll be back tomorrow with your daily news. Thank you very much.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.